You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Alexa Datt, and today we're talking Nats baseball. We bring in our Nationals reporter for MLB.com, Jamal Collier. Jamal, latest news is that the Nationals are interested in a few Marlins. They're continuing fire sale down there in Miami. Nats are looking at JT Realmuto and Christian Yelich. How strong are those interests?
Yeah, well, I mean, first off, Realmuto makes a lot of sense for the Nats. Man, you look at a team that's pretty set in most of their positions, but the one kind of clear need they have or a clear place they could upgrade would be catcher. And Realmuto is one of the best hitting catchers in baseball. You know, he's a guy who's young and affordable, and he would just kind of make a lot of sense if you could put him on this in this Nats lineup. And you're really talking about 1-8, a team with no holes. You know, if he can put him there behind the plate and maybe complement him with Weeders or potentially move Weeders. But, you know, that is a strong interest, I think, for the Nationals. Makes a lot of sense. They checked in on him at the winter meetings. At that point, the Marlins didn't plan on moving him. Since then, they've kind of a little bit changed their tune and are willing to listen to some offers here. But it would take a pretty substantial haul to get him. I think that's kind of where the roadblock is, you know, for a guy like Realmuto, who, like you said, is young, does have the years of control and has been so good. A lot of teams are going to be interested. The Marlins are going to want a really good prospect back, especially after the couple of trades they had with Stanton and Ozuna, you know, where really the prospects weren't necessarily the focus. You're going to look at, you're going to have to give up a pretty good prospect. And whether the Nats are willing to part with a guy like Victor Robles or Juan Soto, one of those top guys, would kind of be the big kind of the decision here, whether or not they're willing to go to that price. And I'm not necessarily sure they're there yet. You're looking at a guy like Realmuto or even Yelich as well. Yelich is a little bit different. Obviously, the Nats don't have a need for him. They have their outfield is pretty set. But when you have a guy who's as good as he is and as young as he is and has years of control, it could be enticing to the Nats for that reason as well.
But Jamal, the craziest part about this is that we're hearing that the Marlins want three minor leaguers and an MLB starter for each player, not for both, but for each. Could the Nats actually afford a mega deal to get both of these guys in exchange for six minor leaguers and two MLB starters?
Yeah, I mean, I think on one hand, the Nats are one of the few teams who actually have those kind of pieces. You know, you look at, they have the top sort of prospects, Robles, Soto, are guys who are you know, top 50 or so prospects that people would be interested in. They have guys, potentially Michael Taylor, you can move. If you move a guy like Matt Weeters or you move, you know, somebody else, maybe on your starting rotation or something, you have pieces there that they could potentially make that deal make sense. It's just about what exactly the Nats would be willing to pay, especially for a guy like Yelich, who would be a bit of a luxury and it's something that you don't necessarily need. And even to an extent, Realmuto, so he'd definitely be an upgrade. He definitely could use that, you know, sort of new catcher. But, you know, do they go and pay that sort of price for you know, a guy when they already have this kind of money committed to a catcher? I'm not necessarily sure they'd willing to go that far. But they definitely have the pieces that could make that work.
Well, and the fact that Victor Robles is even being mentioned is a little scary for Nationals fans because he's been so highly touted and hyped and, you know, they've been excited to see what he could do so far. Is that something they would actually move, Robles?
I will say this, you know, you never say never, obviously, but, you know, based off from the winter meetings, Rizzo was asked about this and just based off the tune just that I'm getting from people in the organization, it would be very difficult to see a scenario where they would move Victor Robles. You know, we've heard about the hype about him. We saw what he did in that kind of limited action, making the majors last year and for the final month of the season, making his way onto the playoff roster. And, you know, he's a guy who has been touted as one of the outfielders of the future, whether it be in center field or wherever it might be. He makes so much sense, obviously, with him. You know, you have him as insurance for Michael Taylor this year. You know, whether or not Bryce Harper is on your team after this next season, you know, you have Robles waiting in the wing potentially to take that spot. So it would be very difficult to see a scenario where they would move him, and they definitely would not do it lightly. So I think that I would read a little bit easy and think that it would, you know, it would take a lot of convincing or something would have to happen to trade him. But it's something that, you know, we've seen. Their window is right now and their time to kind of strike is right now. And I think if they feel this trade makes them that much better, I you know, we saw last year with the way they kind of moved prospects, kind of a little bit out of the norm for them, that they realize that there's their chance to win is right now. And, you know, maybe they can make that move.
Jamal, you sent a tweet out that made me smile as I'm looking out my window here and watching it seemed like the world end. But Nats fans, to get our mind off the snow, pitchers and catchers report to spring training on February 14th. So it's right around the corner. Let's talk about this rotation. 1-4 is pretty set with Scherzer, Strasburg, Gio, and Tanner Roark. They were looking to potentially acquire a fifth starter in free agency, but let's say they go with an in-house candidate. What's their opening day rotation look like?
Yeah, you know, if I had to predict that right now, as far as the way things set up, AJ Cole really finished the year pretty strong last year. He's a guy who's out of options. He's kind of went up and down and bounced around the minor leagues over the past couple of seasons between the minors and majors. And I think that they saw those strides in him he made over his last six or so starts, where he had about a 3 ERA. I think if you had to start the season right now, they'd probably feel more comfortable starting the season with AJ Cole in that fifth starter spot, with potentially Eric Fetty ready to kind of take his, potentially move into that rotation if something were to happen, later on in the season. But I think with Cole did that last, handful of starts there over the last month or so of the season, kind of really improved his stock with the organization, and they feel pretty good about his potential going forward.
All right, sounds good. Let's talk about this lineup. Now that Adam Eaton is back and he is healthy, it's going to be interesting to see where he fits into this lineup and how it all shakes out. Where do you see him batting, and then how does the rest of the lineup unfold?
I'm actually pretty interested in how the lineup is going to go. Obviously, got a new manager in Dave Martinez, and he said he's a guy who learned under Joe Maddon. And we know Joe Maddon was known to get creative with his lineups from time to time. And I think that, Dave Martinez has said over the last couple of months since he's gotten his job that he's jotted down a bunch of different lineups and a bunch of different kind of ways these guys all fit in. The one thing we do know about this is that he does feel like Adam Eaton is going to be the leadoff hitter. So I think that you'll see Eaton probably at number one for the most part, at least to start the year. But where everybody else falls in, does he hit Bryce second? Does he, hit him down at third? Anthony Rendon was a kind of a popular, where does he slot into that lineup? Will we see the pitcher hitting eighth? The names are pretty much set. The Nats have pretty much got everybody, settle into what positions they'll be. But, how these guys stack up is going to be kind of pretty fun to see exactly how Martinez kind of sees this all, stacking up. And I think during spring training will be kind of the first glimpse of that, where you'll see him probably try a bunch of different lineups in a bunch of different scenarios. Where does Trey Turner fit into that, as well as kind of an interesting one that I think that, I'll be looking forward to watching that in spring training to see how he, has a different lineup out there every day.
If you're the Nats manager, give me your lineup as it stands right now.
Man, all right, put me in a hot seat here. I would probably go with Eaton, Turner, 1-2, Rice, Rendon, Murphy, Zimmerman. That kind of breaks up the righty lefty matchup there. I think pretty much 1-6, and then you can put. I think you have Wieters. I may go Wieters pitcher hitting eighth, and Michael Taylor hitting ninth. That's where I'd probably go. Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting. Why Taylor so far down?
I think that he, with the power and speed combo, I like him a lot as in that second leadoff spot, more so than him hitting, seventh or eighth and kind of being not somewhat buried, but kind of just being somewhat in that mix there. I like him as a second leadoff hitter. I think that that's a chance for him to kind of get some good pitches to hit and really make an impact. But, I'd probably try that and see where it goes and be willing to adjust if not.
Okay, sounds good. Let's move on to the bullpen. We've got Kinsler, Madsen, and Doolittle, the little law firm there, top relievers for this team, 7, 8, 9 guys. How do they bridge the gap, though, from these dominant starters to, this kind of team that they've assembled or that they assembled last year at the trade deadline? The biggest issue for them was bridging the gap. What's going to change from, this year that they weren't able to do last year?
Well, I'll say this. This is probably the best Nats bullpen that they've had in January in the last couple of years. Because it's normally at this point we're questioning, well, who's going to close and who's going to pitch the eighth and who's going to do this? And that's pretty settled right now. And I think that that's a testament to, the trades they made and re-signing Brandon Kinsler that, for once, they feel really good about their end of the bullpen right now. There are some question marks, mainly with health. Sean Kelly and Cota Glover are the two biggest ones. And if those guys, at least one of them can be healthy and really give them the kind of performance they've seen from Cota and glimpses, if they saw from Sean Kelly a couple years ago when he was more healthy than last year, that's going to be a really, a big weapon that goes to the back of that bullpen as well to help kind of get and bridge the gap there. I think they feel confident with Sammy Solis. Another guy who's had some health question marks, but they feel good about him and Andy Ramiro is from the left side as well. So they've got some options. They've got some guys who fit into the bullpen roles, and I think will be able to make an impact. The question is just with health with a lot of those guys. But if they can get a couple of those guys healthy and become a little more reliable, then I think their bullpen is going to stack up pretty well.
Any questions about Kinsler, Mattson, and Doolittle over the full season?
You know, not really. I think that's going to be – they have to figure out how to manage them, because now if we talk about health issues, Mattson and more recently Doolittle have had some arm injuries in the past. And I think that one of the things I thought that they did pretty well at the end of last year – now Doolittle pitched a lot kind of the end of the year, but for a while they were not throwing those guys too – and when you have all three of them, you don't have to necessarily rely on them for three in a row or four out of five too much early in the season, because if Doolittle's pitched back-to-back days, you can give him a day off and use Mattson as your closer. You know, if both those guys have pitched a lot, you can slide Kinsler into the closing role, because he's done it before, has experience in that role. So I think that, you know, if you balance the three of them and give guys days off and don't use them all the time, and especially when you have starters that will probably pitch deep into the game like they do, they should be able to manage it well enough to kind of hopefully, you know, lessen the load a little bit on these guys' arm. But, I mean, it's a good point you bring up that these guys also have a little bit of injury history. But, I think they feel pretty good with the three of them back together. They can kind of stagger it a little bit and, lighten the workload on them.
All right. And finally, as we wrap up the podcast here, Jamal, I'm going to ask you, and we've talked about this a little while here for a couple of weeks, but what do you believe as we start the new year and we turn the calendar? I know that the Nats just ripped up their entire surface down there of the field, trying to hopefully exorcise some demons. What do you believe their New Year's resolution is for 2018?
Yeah, I think the New Year's resolution is to definitely win a playoff series. You know, if you want to start small there, it would be to at least get to the NLCS. And kind of big picture would be that, was to, you know, bring the first World Series back to D.C. And I think that, you know, they've made a lot of moves based off the end of the season, and every kind of move they've made has been geared on making another run at a team they think is going to have a chance to win a championship. So, the Nats are really going to be focused on October for this year. And I think that the ride into it is going to be pretty interesting to see how they can get there and how far they can go.
All right. Like you pointed out, the first full squad workout is February 21st. It can't come soon enough, man. The snow is killing me. All right, Jamal, thanks so much. That's going to do it for us here on MLB.com Extras. I'm Alexa Dapp. Big thanks to Jamal Collier, and we will talk to you next week.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. Today, we're talking Mets baseball, and we bring in Wayne Rondazzo, who is filling in for Anthony Giacomo today on our MLB.com reporter. Happy 2018, Wayne. How's it going?
Yeah, happy new year, Alexa. Everything's good. Getting ready to get out of this cold and start thinking about spring training.
Yeah, I'm telling you, baseball is right around the corner. I can smell it. The latest news from the Mets, they are talking to the Pirates about Andrew McCutchen, which is really interesting because I remember last offseason the Nats were trying to land him. So interesting that another NL East team is trying to pull away the face of Pittsburgh's franchise. How do you think the Mets could accomplish this?
Well, you know, it's an interesting type of deal because, you know, McCutchen is still, at least for the remainder of his contract, a pretty costly player. But he's also not really the same player that he was. You know, there was some concern that he was really on the downside of his career, at least starting that. And then he kind of rebounded in the second half of last year and ended up putting up pretty good numbers, as it turned out. So, you know, it's still kind of, I think the jury's still out on who Andrew McCutchen is, if he's even a center fielder anymore at this stage in his career. You know, the Pirates did tinker with their outfield alignment some last season. So, you know, he's the type of player that maybe could be had for a cheaper cost than in years past, and might come with a little bit of a risk, but certainly would be a splashy name, a guy everybody knows, a face of the franchise type. And I think that the Mets are desperately in need of somebody like that. I think Michael Conforto will step up into that role a little bit more going into this year, although his health is a concern too. And, you know, we obviously don't have too many expectations about what David Wright can bring to the Mets. So they kind of need more veteran presence in that clubhouse. They traded a lot of guys last year that had that. And McCutchen could fit in, give the Mets, a little bit more detail in the outfield, a little bit more power, and certainly a guy that can know his way around the clubhouse.
The Mets have also been linked to Jason Kipnis and Josh Harrison this offseason. What's the latest here?
Yeah, I think for those two, I think the Mets are still waiting out the market on in terms of what they feel like they can get for those players. And it seems like Cleveland has kind of pulled Jason Kipnis back a little bit. I don't think they're as anxious to trade him as maybe the reports seem like they were out there. And I think for Pittsburgh, they just want younger players. In the terms of the Mets, you know, they do have some younger pitchers who I think could be attractive to Pittsburgh, whether it's McCutcheon or a Harrison. So, you know, Robert Gsellman, Seth Lugo, you know, those types of pitchers, even Rafael Montero, I think is still young enough and still has enough upside where you could spin him for a player like Harrison. Maybe Luis Guillorme, one of the Mets' top prospects, a young middle infielder, is somebody that can bring in a guy like that. So I think that for the Pirates, considering where they want to be and where they are right now, you know, they might be thinking of younger, closer to major league ready type players, whereas, you know, the Mets could use, like I said, a veteran type and a guy who certainly could play second base in Harrison or Kipnis for that matter. But it seems to me the Pirates are a better trade partner for the Mets right now than Cleveland would be.
How about bringing back Jose Reyes to potentially play second? I know he doesn't have a ton of experience there, but he said he's willing to take less money to come back to the organization, and of course there's the familiarity.
Yeah, I mean, he'll take a lot less money because he was making over $20 million still last year.
Yeah.
With Colorado. So wherever he lands, he's going to be making a lot less. But you know, I just don't see where Jose Reyes can give you what you want on a daily basis. I think as a utility player, he'd still work out for them. But, you know, they still have TJ Rivera on the roster. And, you know, even though he might not be ready for the start of the season coming off of his Tommy John surgery, you know, he's still going to be a guy that they rely on pretty heavily. You know, if Wilmer Flores is not starting somewhere, then, you know, he's going to be in that role too, playing as a utility type. You have Estrubel Cabrera, and if you do land a guy like Josh Harrison or someone to play second base, well, then you have Cabrera, Flores, and Rivera all pretty much fighting for positions somewhere. So it's just not conducive, I don't think, for the Mets to bring in Jose Reyes and have him be anything more than somebody who's coming off the bench, certainly at this stage in his career, for a contending team, or at least a team that feels like it can be in contention. You know, I don't see where he'd be a fit to be a starting player.
Another name that keeps popping up, the Mets are obviously very familiar with, is Jay Bruce. Let me ask you this, Wayne. With the way the offseason is moving this year, what are the chances that Jay Bruce's price tag drops just a bit and the Mets are more aggressive than originally thought to bring him back to Queens for a second stint?
Yeah, I think the fact that we're going to be in the second week of January here pretty soon and virtually every free agent is still available just shows that I think everybody's price tag is going to drop compared to what maybe you thought. Even the likes of a J.D. Martinez or a Jake Arrieta will probably get less years and or less money than pitchers and position players of that ilk have gotten in years past. So I think everybody has to be kind of ready for that. And I think the Mets are waiting it out. They could possibly pounce on anybody who has taken a dip down. I mean, there's no reason to overpay for some of these players if nobody's going to overpay. You're not really fighting with anybody else to get them. So the market, as it always does, will develop itself, and you'll see it when it happens. And for Jay Bruce, you know, it might not be 4 years and $70 million like he thought it was going to be. And, you know, he certainly has value to the Mets, being able to play some first base, being a guy with power, being a guy who's already familiar there, and again, another veteran in the clubhouse. So I think it makes a lot of sense for the Mets to keep their options open with Bruce, but I think it makes a lot of sense for them to keep their options open with everybody, with Lorenzo Cain, with Mike Moustakas. We saw his name come up in an article recently. So if the Mets feel like they can get something at a fairly bargain price, a guy who's going to really help them, then I think it's smart of them to just wait it out and see what falls into their lap.
I know Logan Morrison and Adam Lynn have both been mentioned in that conversation. Do you see either of those players fitting in Queens?
Yeah, Lynn to me is a guy who is more of we saw him in that utility role with Washington last year. He flourished in that role. You know, he's not going to be, I think there's an expectation when you sign a free agent that it's going to be someone who is really going to change your organization or change the outlook of your team and add win total. I don't know that Adam Lind does that. I don't know that Logan Morrison does that, but I think Morrison would be a fit in a sense that, you know, he plays first base, and I think that there's some need of security at that position. You know, I think Dominic Smith is still going to be the guy going into the season, going into camp at least, but I don't think it would hurt. You know, you already have a rookie shortstop I don't think it would hurt to have somebody that could step in at first base in case the rookie there does not take off. You know, I think with Rosario, you at least have the defense. You feel like the bat's going to come. And for Dom Smith, I think the bat will be there eventually too for him. But if you're trying to win in 2018, can you afford two rookie infielders? I think that's a big question for them.
All right, so maybe some moves still to come for the Mets, but let's talk about the guys that they do have. Let's start with their rotation. Hashtag no offseason for Noah Syndergaard, by the way, because he's been on social media doing all kinds of workouts, not getting as jacked as he was last year, because obviously he said that was probably some of the reasons why he was injured or that led to his injury. He only ended up throwing about 30 innings because of that lat injury last year, but he's going to sit atop of this rotation with Jacob deGrom. How do you see the rest of the rotation shaping up?
Well, to me, yeah, you got the two horses there, and Syndergaard and DeGrom, and you need those guys to make their starts, all 30 to 35 of them. And then what you have after that, you still have depth in the pitching department. You still have Steven Matz coming off, you know, a pretty down year for him, a year that included a surgery, the same one that DeGrom had the year previous. So I think there's at least some thought that maybe Matz is corrected, and maybe he can be healthier in 2018 than he's been. You just absolutely have no idea what Matt Harvey's going to give you. You know, Zach Wheeler, I think, was on the right path and threw, what, 70, 80 innings last year. So I think they can count on him to give you a little bit more in next season. And then, you know, that Gesellman, Lugo, Montero camp, you know, those extra guys that you have at the back end there. So I think all you need, And some of those guys might get lumped into a trade here in the near future, but for what you have right now, you have those two guys at the beginning that you need all those starts from, and then from the rest of the group, you just need to piece it together, whether that's 15 starts for Wheeler, 20 for Harvey, 15 for Matz, 15 for Gesellman. You kind of just have to hope that those guys give you enough major league quality innings to fill up the back end of that rotation. And if it's Harvey and Matz that come out of it and look like the pitchers they used to look like, then that's gravy for this Mets team. I think that's exactly what the hope is for a team that is still really built around its pitching staff. You know, if one or two of those guys in that second group can give you high quality stuff, well, then I think this turns out to be a pretty good season for them.
How about this bullpen? Just one signing for the Mets this offseason, a two-year deal with Anthony Swarzak, as we know. That'll help bolster the bullpen. How do you see the rest of it shaping up?
Yeah, Swarzak, I think you got a good little group at the end of the games here with Swarzak joining Ramos and Familia and Blevins. You know, Hansel Robles will still be leaned on to get some outs. I think out of the group of starters that I just mentioned, you know, at least one or two of those guys should end up in the bullpen. For me, Zach Wheeler is a perfect candidate to be a relief pitcher for this team and a guy that you can kind of be almost a swingman of sorts. You know, I think our expectation of Mickey Callaway is that he's going to manage a lot differently than Terry Collins did. Terry was pretty conventional when it came to his bullpen management and, you know, a guy who relied on his relievers pretty heavily in the same situations on a fairly daily basis. So I think with Mickey, you kind of expect maybe a guy's going to eat up two or three innings in a game that is a close game, you know, not just in the throwaway situation, but bring in a guy who he feels can get nine outs on a given day. And that guy could be Zach Wheeler for what it's worth. But, you know, I think the Mets still have to look at Paul Sewald and Chasen Bradford, who had a pretty good time in the major leagues last year. You know, give those guys a look in camp, and, you know, they might bring in another guy or two along the way as well. So I don't think they're done in terms of shopping for the bullpen, but I do think if they go into it with what they have right now, you know, Mickey Callaway and Dave Eyland are going to have to be pretty creative about how they use this group of starters in terms of getting relief innings out of them.
All right, and last but not least, this Mets lineup, it'll be interesting to see. We know Michael Conforto underwent shoulder surgery. Is he still questionable for opening day? What do you expect from him, the rest of this lineup, and Yoenis Cespedes this season?
Yeah, I think they're going to take it slow with Conforto. I don't think they want to rush him. I think that he feels like he can be ready for opening day. But I think that, they, you know, if it's May 1st, I don't think the Mets really are too concerned about him missing 3-4 weeks at the beginning of the season, you know, in an effort to not push it. With that regard, though, they're going to have trouble scoring runs if Conforto's not in the lineup on a daily basis, as they are right now, because I think Juan Lagares is going to have to be the everyday center fielder, which ultimately I'm great with, because I think this pitching staff needs someone of that caliber defensively in center field. And I think Lagares is a perfect guy for them to play every day, or at least most days. Brandon Nimmo's on the team right now as a fourth outfielder. He's been great off the bench so far as a big leaguer. Of course, Cespedes, you got to get him right from a health standpoint. Rosario, Smith, the two rookies on the infield with Cabrera and a second baseman to be named. I think it's pretty safe to say that it'll be somebody that is not currently on the roster that plays second base for this team. And then I think the Darno-Plawecki combo really caught some attention at the end of last season. I think Plawecki was a different hitter coming up from AAA, finally got it as far as his offense goes. And I wouldn't be surprised to see those two split the catching duties right down the middle. I don't think either one of them is a guy who should be making 130 starts behind the plate. I think if you go 80 and 80 between the two of them, I think you'll get the most out of each of them.
All right, Wayne, we've been asking this of all of our podcast guests. Of the team you cover, what's their New Year's resolution? Can the Mets' New Year's resolution be anything else than stay healthy?
No, I don't think so. I think that is the absolute for them. You know, it's a division still that has one great team and then a bunch of teams that aren't very good. I think we all know the Marlins are going to be in bad shape this year. The Braves, you know, they got hit so hard in their minor league system. It's going to be tough for them to get to the point that they thought they would. And the Phillies are going to be better, but they're not going to be a team that I don't think is going to contend in 2018. So it's still there for the Mets to take, to make a run at Washington and to get these guys healthy and go for it. So, I think they could be a sleeper pick in some ways as far as seeing them contend for the postseason, but there's still some work to do, and they absolutely need their pitchers to be healthy, or really there's no chance for them.
All right, that's going to do it for us here on MLB.com Extras Mets Edition. Big thank you to Wayne for filling in for Anthony DiComo. Until next week, Wayne, thanks so much.
All right, Alexa, thank you.
Hey, everyone, welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Alexa Datt, and today we are talking Marlins baseball. We bring in our Marlins reporter for MLB.com, Joe Fusaro. Joe, there is so much going on, man, with Giancarlo Stanton, Marcelo Ozuna, and Dee Gordon traded this offseason. We thought that the Marlins were potentially done because they were maybe discussing Christian Yelich and JT Realmuto, but they kind of pulled back on that. Now it seems like they could possibly be traded. What's the latest here?
Yeah, Alexa, momentum seems to be building toward, possibly taking this from listening to potential offers to seriously considering it and actually pulling the trigger and completing trades and kind of making a clean sweep of what they're hoping to be, or at least initially planning to be, kind of a restructure. Obviously, you don't move a Stanton, a Ozuna, a Gordon without it being a major redirect. But they're at least initially anticipating Yelich and Realmuto being part of the bigger picture. But I think that, as they're kind of looking at where they stand, either financially in terms of distraction, the amount of questions these two will be asked if they're on the team come spring training or opening day, that this cloud will kind of hover. And let's face it, their value is at its highest right now. But what I've been, told is the return will be an overpay. The Marlins have no urgency to move either one. Yet they want, these are faces of the franchise, all-star caliber players, and prospect return will include those. And I reported today that the Nationals, as well as the Braves, are interested in not one, but maybe both. I know Nationals kind of would look at if they could somehow even pull off the big play and get a package deal for both of them, they could be looking at the Dodgers as, surpassing them to try to get to the World Series. So, it's going to come down to there's at least 15 teams on Yelich, at least a dozen in on Realmuto, a little bit slighter interest in Christian over JT for the fact that there's more need for outfielders. There's three of those spots compared to one catcher. But, you know, it's going to cost a lot. It's going to cost, you know, Victor Robles, the number three overall prospect in baseball, right-handed power hitting outfielder in the national system, would be a guy that would probably be a centerpiece in return for a Yelich. And keep this in mind, if you're Washington, you could be looking at, if you add Yelich, he gives you, obviously helps your chances to win it in 18, but he also gives you a little bit of protection in the outfield in anticipation of next offseason when Bryce Harper hits the free agent market. So, you know, there's a lot of return for a 26-year-old with 4 years remaining on his contract at very affordable, under $45 million remaining, that makes him very attractive to Washington. And Real Muto is just first-year arbitration. You know, his stock is as high as it's ever going to be. You know, he's a fringe, you know, to my opinion, he was an all-star this year. He didn't get in. But, you know, he's certainly one of the top four or five catchers in the sport. So those two guys are hot and heavy in demand. The Phillies are a team. And, you know, but, you know, if the Phillies want to play in this ballpark to get Yelich, it may cost them Rhys Hoskins. So, you know, it's not going to be an easy return for anyone to make this trade. But I also think they could carry this to the trade deadline. But I think the Marlins may run a little risk in doing so, because if you take it to July, you're only then dealing with the contenders. And those contenders may not have the prospect package to get the deal done now. You could get, you know, the Phillies, the Braves, you know, the White Sox, if they were to want to be into, you know, teams with very deep systems that may not be right there to compete. So it should be a very eventful January in terms of getting those two guys. And from what I was told, you know, everyone's just kind of getting back from the holidays and just kind of getting there, you know, settled in. I think you're going to really hear Yelich, Real Muto talks come, you know, next week.
Yeah, but Joe, from what we're hearing from the Marlins, they want three minor leaguers and an MLB starter for each player, not for both players, but for each. I mean, that is a steep asking price. Is that really something that a team can afford, or is this just talk?
No, it absolutely is. When you look at, you know, what did Chris Sale go for? You know, what did, you know, these guys, that's the going rate. You know, they don't have no urgency to move them. You know, these are guys that put you over the top. Now, you know, I think what you, more than a starter in the big leagues, they need a big league ready player. You know, a guy that, you know, is ready to come and be in your lineup. But it's going to cost two to three of your top prospects. It's not going to be, you know, they're not moving money in this. You know, you're getting 4 years, potentially 5 years of control with Yelich counting his club option, which is a very affordable $15 million in 2022, and 3 full years of JT Realmuto with, you know, if you have the chance to sign him long term. So, you know, these are all-star caliber players, face of the franchise players. You're going to get that in return, or the Marlins really have no reason to make this move.
All right, so if Christian Yelich does remain with the team, sources are saying that he's going to move to left. How is that going to work out in the outfield?
Well, he's played there before. You know, he won the Gold Glove in left field in 2014, and he probably is, you know, Marlins Park is very spacious, and Yelich can run and can handle ground. But I think if you look at a lot of defensive metrics, he wasn't up there among center fielders. And, you know, he was playing center field out of a function of, you had Marcell Ozuna and Giancarlo Stanton out there. Stanton wasn't going to play center. Ozuna played it, but doesn't have the range that Yelich does. And you know, the kid Sierra, who they got in the Ozuna trade, is the guy can fly. One of the fastest guys in the league, and he's a center fielder. And Braxton Lee, the other, you know, outfielder now in the 40-man, the only three of them remain. Lee was Double A, was you know, the co-batting champ in Double A in the Southern League, and he's a guy who probably profiles more as a fourth outfielder. But he draws a lot of a Brett Gardner comp, and from what I heard, he came over from the Rays system as part of the Adani Echevarria trade, and a lot of people I respect say he was defensively kind of in the ballpark with Kevin Kiermaier. So you're talking about a very elite Gold Glove caliber center fielder. So, you know, I would think as stands, if those are the three in the outfield, which I don't think that's how it's going to play, I think a moves will be made. I see Yelich in left field, either Sierra in center or Lee in center. And if it's the three of them, Lee probably in right based on the arm.
Yeah, it's mix it up. It's 2018, right? Why not? And that's going to be an interesting outfield. Obviously, the loss of Ozuna and Stanton, who combined for 96 homers last year, is going to sting. Let's take a look at this lineup, though, as it stands right now. Where are they going to turn to replace that power in this lineup? And if Yelich and Real Muto are not moved, What does that mean for this lineup as it looks right now?
Yeah, the lineup right now, if you kind of look at it from the, if let's say they keep JT and they keep the infield as is, they keep Starlin Castro. Their infield isn't that bad. You know, you have Justin Bour at first base. You're looking at Castro at second, a combination of JT Riddle and Miguel Rojas at short. Riddle has a little bit of power, you know, not a ton, but, you know, he swings a bat, he gets on base. And Martin Prado returns from injury to play third, which allows Brian Anderson to start off in AAA, get a little more seasoning and be there. And then the outfield is the question mark. We do, you know, you're looking at Yelich as the centerpiece, assuming he stays. You know, that Sierra could be in center, the kid they got for Marcell Ozuna. And then you're looking at Braxton Lee in potentially in right field. So I could see a batting order, Alexa, of, you know, you could start out with Sierra. And if you want to go speed, you could go like Lee and Sierra or Sierra and Lee leading off. You go to Yelich hitting third. You know, you're probably going to have Bour hitting fourth. You know, you got Prado, you got Real Muto to mix in there. And, you know, then you're following it up with probably Riddle. And, you know, as you make your way down the line. Or you could go with something like, if you want to go left-right, you could go with like Sierra leading off, Castro hitting second, Yelich hitting third, Bour fourth, Prado fifth, Real Muto sixth. You know, and as you go down, that's not a bad lineup. It's not a power hitting lineup, but you got some quality players there who could get on base and maybe create some havoc. So, you know, I think the lineup right now, you sacrificed, you know, 96 home runs from a year ago, and Giancarlo Stanton and Marcell Ozuna are now gone. So you're not going to be a home run hitting team, especially in a park like Marlins Park. So I think their lineup, at least offensively, is going to look a little more athletic, a little more speed, and a little more get on base and try to make things happen there.
I guess a lot of this will determine, you know, how this team shapes up if Yelich and Real Muto are part of it opening day. Let's talk about the Marlins' biggest need, which is pitching. Team ERA ranked 26th last season. Of the players that they acquired in trades or who they have right now, who do you see making the biggest impact on the rotation as it stands right now?
Yeah, you know, the thing in the trades they made brought in some really power arms in Sandy Alcantara and Jorge Guzman. You know, they come over in trades for, you know, Ozuna and Stanton respectively. But Alcantara pitched in at the bullpen like eight or so innings with the Cardinals late last year. They obviously, Marlins see him a frontline, you know, rotation guy. Guzman is like at low A ball. So he's, even though he throws up to 103 miles an hour, he's still a ways away. So I think you're looking at a rotation right now with Dan Straley and Jose Urania, you know, at the top of it. You know, those two both had over 10 wins last year. Actually, Urania led the team with 14. And then, you know, you got those guys. And then you got, you know, Adam Connolly is a little bit of a wild card. You know, he had a really good 16 season until he got hurt in August, and a very poor, you know, 17 season. But if he could bounce back, you know, then you got Dylan Peters, a kid who got called up in September, who showed a lot of promise before he broke his thumb. He was a guy that was kind of the pitching standout of spring training last year. He is a guy who has a chance to compete for the rotation. And, you know, I think, you know, they got some Rule 5 players that they brought in that they think can contribute and be helpful in, you know, or at least get a shot to make rotation spot. But, you know, you even brought in a guy like Jacob Turner as a, you know, as a non-roster invitee. He gets a call in. He could be one of those spot starter long reliever types. But I think there's still going to be some moves that the team makes to bring in some rotation help, you know, mainly get, you know, a stopgap guy that could help if Alcantara opens up the season in double or triple A. You know, to me, Alexa, with young pitchers, the month of April is always very cold and no one's really kind of, you know, stretched out yet. You know, especially, you know, playing the National League East when you're, you know, at Miami's fine. It's got a roof and a good climate to begin with. But you go to New York, you go to Washington, Philly, you know, those places could get pretty cold. And I don't, you know, I think these teams, at least the first couple of weeks, don't mind their young pitchers that haven't really gone through it to try to avoid those weeks, especially if, you know, you could help on service time and other factors as well. So, you know, I think that there's literally no rush on any of their high-end prospects. So it's going to be kind of a rotation that might be piecemealed, you know, fronted by, like I said, Straley and Urania.
All right, now let's talk about the bullpen. Closer by committee is a term I've heard thrown out there for this team. Is that the direction they're going? Do they have one specific closer that they have their mind set on, or is this going to be something that they're going to figure out as the season progresses?
Yeah, another guy you're looking at is Brad Ziegler. You know, he's one more year in his contract. He has, you know, over 90, I believe, career saves. Kind of took over that role when A.J. Ramos was moved. But I don't think they're looking at Ziegler to be the closer. He's a guy who has done it before, and he's a veteran. So it leaves it to a guy like Kyle Barraclough, who in 16, if you looked at his strikeout, you know, per nine was way, way up there. And but his, you know, a little bit of decline in 17, and his command is an issue. So Barraclough has wipeout stuff. He can strike you out. He has a really good slider, and he throws in the upper 90s. But a guy I'm kind of keeping my eye on, Alexa, that could be the closer of this team, and it may not be day one, but it may be maybe before May and June, is Drew Steckenrider. Really hard thrower. A couple of years ago, it was a standout in the Arizona Fall League. You know, a kid who came up through their system, you know, pitched a bit in the big leagues last year, showed a lot of promise, and, you know, he kind of has that toughness. He's a strike thrower, which is really important with your closer, and I think that we're going to see Drew Steckenrider get a really good shot at being a closer. And the rest of the pen, you know, the setup would be like Barraclough, Ziegler. You know, they have Tozawa still with the team. You know, obviously they're trying to move both Tozawa and Ziegler if possible to clear their money off the books. But, you know, they have some pitchers there, and I think, you know, they'll probably carry, again, you know, 13 pitchers, you know, a couple extra long relievers. Jacob Turner could fit into that type of role as well. So, you know, that's how it's kind of going to look for a while.
All right, Joe, a lot of moving pieces with this Marlins team, and presumably they're not done yet. As we close off the podcast, we're starting off 2018 here, asking our beat reporters, asking all of our team reporters, what the New Year's resolution for their team is. And what do you believe the Marlins' resolution is for 2018?
I think it should be a fresh start, just kind of a wipe the slate clean resolution. You know, clearly they're gone through adversity and a house cleaning. And I think that they just, you know, the resolution should just be like, this is a new day, a new era, and kind of leave the past, you know, leave 2017 in the rearview mirror, and, you know, just have a forward thinking, fresh start approach to, you know, putting this franchise on the right footing to be a contender when their timing is right.
All right. That's going to do it for us here on MLB.com Extras Marlins edition. Thanks to Joe Fusaro for joining us today. Until next week. Thanks, Joe. Really appreciate it.
Hey everyone, welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Alexa Datt, and today we are talking Braves baseball. We bring in our Braves reporter for MLB.com, Mark Bowman. Mark, the team announces Joe Simpson and Tim Hudson will be introduced into the Braves Hall of Fame. Let's start with Tim Hudson. Spent 9 seasons with his hometown team. What has he meant to this organization?
Well, you know, it seems like yesterday that they made the trade to bring him from the A's, you know, right there before the 2005 season. That was the point in time where you're getting away from the days of Maddox and Clavin. Smoltz was coming back to the rotation at that point in time, and Tim Hudson was acquired to be that ace for the future. And, the deal was a great deal when you think about what they gave up. And here's a guy that they grew up an hour and a half south of Atlanta, and to be able to come home and be able to extend his contract even before the start of spring training that year. Everything, I think that everything went as well as expected. I thought Tim put it best yesterday when I talked to him. He said, I gave it everything I had. He said there were two or three years that you know, I'd like to have back, that maybe maybe I didn't provide, you know, value that necessary or you know what they were seeking, but this is a deal that you would do every day. You know, anytime you had a chance to do this again, not just because of what he provided on the mound, but the leadership he provided, the guidance he provided to some of the young pitchers that were coming up as he was in their late, or, well, 2009, 2010. You had Chris Medlin, Tommy Hansen coming through to a small extent. He got to help Charlie Morton for a little while, and he just was such a great clubhouse figure. I was talking to him and Eric Hensky and David Ross and Jason Hayward during the playoffs at one point in time when the Nationals were playing the Cubs this year about how great that 2010 club was, and Huddy talked about it. It was a great season for him, He was coming back from Tommy John. He got comeback player of the year, and he had a great season. But he just kept talking about, you know, the memories he had of playing for Bobby Cox during that final season, and just, you know, how that team bonded. There was something special about it. He had a lot of great guys on it, Martin Prado and the other guys I just mentioned. There was something. There was a chemistry with that club, and also, you know, just that they were bonding to try to make Bobby's season, last season, so special. You know, he was a big leader within that clubhouse, highly respected, and you know, he certainly deserving to go in the Hall of Fame, as is, you know, Joe Simpson. It's good to see. Here's a guy who's getting ready to start his 27th season broadcasting this team, and he's kind of continued that lineage back to Skip and Pete, the two legendary broadcasters. No one will ever be regarded in the same at the same level as Skip and Pete here in Braves history amongst the broadcasters, but at the same time, you know, Joe learned from those guys. He worked with them for many years, and he's kind of kept that lineage alive. And his long tenure here is going to be rewarded when he goes into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, absolutely. He began broadcasting for the team back in 1992, so he's definitely seen some ups and downs with this team. Let's talk about some of the latest news with the Braves this week. Their GM is interested in acquiring JT Realmuto and or Christian Yelich potentially from the Marlins. How would the Braves be able to make either of these players work in their organization?
Well, it's going to be expensive to get either one of them. And, you know, I think that there are plenty of teams that would be interested in either one of these guys. You know, we all know what the Marlins situation is. It's not necessarily as they were unloading Stanton, Gordon, and Ozuna. You know, it became apparent that, you know, there's a chance that these two guys could become available. They even, you know, to some extent expressed their desire to be traded if this is the way the team was going. They didn't want to be the last one left in town. So, I at that point in time, the interesting thing is this. The Braves were somewhat ahead of the game because they, while some teams were expressing interest in Stanton and Ozuna, they were checking in on Yelich, and they thought they made some progress during the winter meetings. But the Marlins backed away at that point in time. They were getting hit pretty hard from their fans and everything. But there was the outlash created by the other trades was it was time for them to you know, take a break. So that's where they stood. And, you know, in the meantime, now that, you know, the Braves have maintained interest, there are many other teams that have interest in Yelich. And as for Realmuto, I mean, I wrote last week that, you know, given the choice, as much as I like Yelich, you know, I understand he's got a great contract. He's got a great future. I would take Realmuto because it's a commodity. You know, I'm not saying there are Yeliches that grow on trees, on every tree, but at the same time, there are very few Realmutos in the game. I think you could consider him a very easily one of the top five catchers in the game, and within the next couple of years, he may be considered the best. I mean, here's a true leader within the clubhouse, a great athlete. The Braves are hurting for catching within their system. They have a couple lottery tickets, some guys that might develop, Alex Jackson being, you know, probably the one that people are going to keep their eyes on the most. But at the same time, here's a guy that could be one of the best in the game. Right? Given a choice, I'll take him. But at the same time, you'll take either one. And if you're looking ahead, you know, for this season alone, this is Freddie Freeman is going into this year knowing that he really doesn't have any protection behind him. Adding either one of those two guys to the lineup lengthens it and provides him the protection that he doesn't have within the current projected makeup.
All right, now moving on to the free agent market. The Braves are interested in signing a starting pitcher. We'll keep a close eye on that, and you'll fill us in on any updates, Mark. But for now, the Braves have only three starters locked into rotation spots for 2018, Julio Teheran, Mike Buntanevich, and the newly acquired Brandon McCarthy. What do you believe the rotation will look like for 2018?
Well, I think you've got to throw You can expect the way what you saw from Luis Gohar. It was not a lot of starts there down the stretch. But I think you have to think that he has a good chance to be part of that rotation. You know, I think you also have to keep your eyes open and the possibility that Julio could be traded. You know, as teams get a sense of where they stand heading towards spring training, if there's a desire to add some pitching. You know, here's a guy that projects as maybe a decent, some teams may consider him a decent number three, number four starter, just add some depth to the rotation. And then obviously you got your young kids coming, and that's going to be the interesting thing in camp is, you know, where does a Lucas Sims fit? It's easy to say, oh, well, maybe he's one of their long relievers. You know, maybe he starts the year AAA. You know, he pitched pretty well in many games. He's a competitor. He may not have some of the upside as Max Fried and some of the other young guys that are becoming to camp this year looking to gain a rotation spot. But you've got Fried and Sims there. You've also got Mike Soroka, Colby Allard knocking on the door. You know, and as we talk about these guys, it's a reminder of how deep this system is within pitching and why, yes, you know, there are a lot of teams out there bidding for Yelich and for Real Muto to some extent. But at the same time, the Braves have the pieces that could interest the Marlins because of, you know, this deep pitching crop that we talk about, you know, on a weekly basis in some shape or form. And I think that it's going to be very interesting. I think that the rotation could evolve as the season goes on. One other guy I forgot to throw in there was Sean Newcomb. I think the same thing with Luis Gohar. I think he probably has a spot, coming into the camp. But at the same time, look, if you're a team, you're not going to guarantee a guy with less than 20 career starts, say, hey, look, he definitely have a spot in the rotation. You want him coming to camp hungry and knowing that he has to fight and earn that place that he gained the previous season.
All right, speaking of pitching depth, let's talk about the bullpen. And I know they've got their closer all set in Vizcaino, but how do you see the rest of this relief corps shaping up?
Well, you've got A.J. Minter right there behind Vizcaino. And you look back at how A.J. fared after he came up in August. He ended up striking out 17 of the final 31 batters faced. This guy has closer stuff. I think you start the season with Vizcaino as your closer. You know the mentor can be a top setup man. I think Jose Ramirez, his numbers were tarnished by the fatigue that he showed down the stretch last year. I think you can pencil him in there. And I still kind of expect them to add another bullpen piece. It may not be a necessity. They have a lot of depth. They have a lot of arms that can compete for spots. But, you know, with their young rotation, they're probably going to go with an 8-man pen. So once you get back and say you've got Daniel Winkler, Sam Freeman, to help there in the middle innings, and now all of a sudden you got 5 of your 8, you still want to continue to add because let's look back just 1 year ago. The Braves brought about 14 or 15 guys to camp in their bullpen. And you thought, okay, they got plenty of depth. They'll get through this year just fine. Well, they didn't even get through spring training, you know, without having to put some guys in that bullpen that they never really intended to. And then you take a look back at how many guys that they were considered candidates last year that aren't even in the system anymore. And that's not just because they were – that's not because they excelled and went and got a big contract elsewhere or were traded for value. You know, they just it's just so hard to predict a reliever from year to year. So while you really like what you saw from Sam Freeman last year, you have to remember that it's just hard to predict what a reliever is going to do from year to year. So you got to have that depth. I think it'd be great if they use some of the money they have left to go ahead and add some experience to that pen.
All right, last but not least, let's talk about this lineup. We've been talking a lot about the Arizona Fall League MVP, Ronald Acuna. I know a lot of people are excited to see him. How do you think this lineup looks opening day?
So opening day, I think it's probably going to be Acuna-less. They'll probably wait a little bit of time to to get him in the lineup just to, you know, just for the service time and all that kind of stuff. Add, enhance the years of control, all that kind of stuff. We'll see exactly how long they wait to add him. But I think there's reason to be excited about, you know, you're going to have NC Arte up there at the top and Albies and Freddie Freeman. There is a concern that, you know, you really don't have that guy that can protect him. I would say right now you put Tyler Flowers in the cleanup spot and probably Nick Markakis behind him. As things stand right now, you got Johan Camargo slated at third base and Dansby Swanson at shortstop. They're going to go ahead and sit down there at the bottom of the lineup. But Camargo, it'll be interesting. I still get the sense that Alex Anthopoulos would like to add a third baseman and utilize Camargo as one of his bench players. So still a chance they go that way. And in left field, for now, you're saying Lane Adams is going to hold that spot until they're ready to promote Acuña, whether that's in late April or, you know, early May, early June, whatever. I'd say Lane Adams will sit there, and maybe Preston Tucker. We'll see how he does during spring training. Maybe they would share the left field position until Acuña's ready.
All right, a lot of moves to be made still for this team potentially, so we'll keep an eye on it, and you'll fill us in. But, Mark, thanks so much for joining us this week on MLB.com Extras, Braves edition, obviously. Big thank you, and until next week, we'll talk to you soon.